Reading from the Jivadharma, Chapter 14, Shakti Prameya, Shakti Tattva. Prajana, for the pastimes of Sri Gaurangadeva, work of Swarup Shakti. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapatantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So anyway, somehow or other we've been plugging away. We're at chapter 14 of Jivadharma. And we've been following the development of Krishna consciousness of one logician who I think becomes initiated as Vrajanath. And now we'll follow his development in Krishna consciousness and systematically the philosophy of direct Krishna consciousness will be presented. And right now, he inquired from this Babaji Maharaj about something called the Dashamula, the 10 core philosophical truths of Krishna consciousness, which are basically a division of three categories, which is Sambandhagyan, what is the epistemological and metaphysical philosophy of Krishna consciousness, Abhideyagyan, what is the philosophy of the means of its understanding Krishna consciousness, and Prayojanagyan, what is the result of becoming Krishna conscious. Anyway, somehow we're in one subject which is part of the metaphysics of Krishna consciousness called Shakti Tattva. And Shakti itself is personalism, really. Because if there's energy, that means there's some kind of activity or in other words, it's once you say there's Shakti as a reality, then there's no question of undifferentiated oneness. So it's an important point of Krishna consciousness and also how to understand the energies. And he explained that there's one main energy, and I'll just sum this up, and I'm learning it myself or revising it. There's one main energy called the Swarup Shakti, which is ultimately Radha. Ultimately what exists is Krishna, the possessor of energy, and Radha, the personification of energies. And that Swarup Shakti has three manifestations and three functions. The three manifestations is the internal potency, the external potency, and the marginal potency, otherwise known as Chit Shakti, Maya Shakti, and Jiva Shakti. Those are the three manifestations, and there's three functions of the Swarup Shakti that influence them, which is the Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, the Samvit Shakti, the cognitive potency, and the Sandini Shakti, the existential potency. So within these combinations, all manifestations of existence arise. And some of them have been discussed, and I've been discussing the Dham. So when the existential potency, or when the existential manifestation of the eternal potency, the eternal manifestation of the absolute truth, the chit shakti is influenced by the sandini shakti, then the Dham exists. So now the question is arise, well, what about Navadvip? How, he's described from Dhavan. What is Navadvip? And he's asking, right, he explains something about it. They describe Navadvip and what's its nature a little bit. So he says, are the pastimes of Garangadeva work of the Sarup Shakti? And this is what the Babaji responds. Sri Gaura's pastimes are arranged by the same Shakti who arranged Sri Krishna's pastimes. There is no difference between Sri Krishna and Garangadeva. Sri Sarup Goswami says, there's a famous verse that's quoted in the very beginning of the Adi Leela, actually the fifth verse. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Mahatini Shaktirismad. Famous verse. Radha and Krishna are intrinsically one. However, they manifest eternally in two forms through the influence of Ladini Shakti, in the form of their pranayaya vikar, the transformation of love, because of the eternality of their pastimes. And somehow the English I don't think is going to work over the phone. Now these two truths are manifested in one sroop in the form of Chaitanya. Therefore I bow to the sroop shakti of Krishna that is endowed with the loving sentience and luster Srimati Radhika. In other words, the verse says that Radha and Krishna are intrinsically one. It's like the rose. You can't separate the rose from its fragrance or the rose from its color. But still, there's the rose and its qualities, so there's God and its energies. But for the purpose of love, they're also two, because love is an exchange. And now these two truths, which of the one absolute truth, Radha and Krishna, have become one in the form of Sri Chaitanya or Gaurangadeva. So they separate for love, and then for God to experience what it's like to love himself, then the two become one, and that's Chaitanya Dev. And Babaji explains further, Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are both eternally manifest. Cannot be determined which of them came early and who came later. First Chaitanya was there, and then Radha Krishna manifested, and now they have merged together again and appear in the form of Chaitanya Dev. The understanding of this statement is not that one of them existed before and the other appeared later. Both manifestations are eternal. They are present for all time and exist for all time. All the pastimes of the Supreme Truth are eternal. Those who think that one of the pastimes is principal and the other is secondary are ignorant of the truth and devoid of rasa. Very beautiful thing. That is their sequence in the spiritual world. We say that Krishna is the original, and from him all things are manifest, but does it mean that the things that manifest from God are not eternal? And it says, no. God has inconceivable potencies. So it's like the sun and the sun rays, which came first. Well, the sun, and then the sun rays. But without the sun rays, there's no sun. So all God's pastimes are eternal. So although they're, in one sense, happen in a sequential form, on one perspective, they're still eternally existing. They're still eternally existing. There's never a time where Krishna is not killing the Kaliya serpent. There's never a time where he's not dancing with the gopis. There's never a time where there's not the first time that he meets Radha. And it makes sense, because God has inconceivable potencies. You know, I'm up here upstate, so I decided to chant more. So throughout the day, I've been chanting at different times. And it's been kind of relaxing. And actually, you know, I'm from New York, so I don't have much country samskaras. I don't go out. The sun has no attraction. Going to the beach. You know, I like to stay in my room, you know. But anyway, I walk a little bit outside, and I'm chanting because I have extra time. This is somehow a time I planned during the year where I wouldn't have any, you know, obligations or things to do. I just planned to work very, very heavy when I came back from India, you know, and then during the summer, and it's actually takes to be honest now, to have a little bit more time off to just catch up on so many things, even look at my library up here and clean the shelves and get rid of some books and go through old files and anyway, take care of my health, eat what I want, you know, whatever it is. So I chant all throughout the day at different times. So I'm just kind of chanting and just trying to see God in nature, actually. And then when I'm chanting and I'm just meditating on it, it's just so inconceivable that just the fact, meditating, that there's something that's always been existing. That's God. And then you ask the question of why? You know, in one sense, there's no reason. But the other option doesn't make sense either, that something all of a sudden is existing when there was nothing before. So either option of what is the ultimate reality is so far beyond your mind. It's just so far beyond your mind. You know, it's... You know, we always look for a cause. Who caused God? No, it's just there's a principle that's not caused. It's just that your mind just fails because we have no experience of something that's not caused, and we have no experience of something existing where nothing exists before. So when you get to the realm of God, all possibilities exist, and that's what God means. So here, there's a theology being presented that there's one thing that becomes two things, that becomes one thing, that they're all existing simultaneously. And it's reasonable because you're talking about God. So now he says, Vrajanath, if Garunga Dev is directly the complete plenary truth, what then is the process for his worship? So, worshipping Gaur by chanting Gaur Nam Mantra awards the same benefit as worshipping Krishna by chanting his holy name in Krishna Nam Mantra. Worshipping Gaur through the Krishna Mantra is the same as worshipping Krishna by the Gaur Mantra. Those who believe there's a difference between Gaura and Krishna are extremely foolish. They're simply servants of Kali. So we're also taught to worship both. We chant Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Syadvaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we also chant both. And one is the access to the other. Vrajanath, where can one find the mantra of the hidden avatar Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Babaji, the tantras which contain the mantra of the manifest avatars also contain the mantra of the hidden avatars in a secret way. Those whose intelligence is not crooked can understand it. So he's the Chana avatar, he's the hidden avatar, because he doesn't come as God, he comes as God's devotee. Now the next stuff is, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he worship Gaur Gadadhar, not Gaur Nitai. So Vrajanath says, by what method is Gauranga worshipped as Yugala in a dual form? Babaji, Sri Gauranga's Yugala is formed in one way in the Archana process and another way in the Bhajana process. So the Archana process means kind of formal deity worship, and the Bhajana process means kind of your meditation from your heart. So he said, Sri Gaura Vishnu Priya are worshipped in the process of Archana. Vishnu Priya is the wife of Lord Chaitanya. And in the process of Bhajan, one performs Seva to Sri Gaura Gadadhar. So Gadadhar is Radha in Krishna Lila. Babaji, which Shakti of Sri Gauranga is Sri Vishnu Priya? I'm still not so clear on this. I have to think about this stuff. The Bhaktas generally refer to her as Bhu Shakti. However, reality, she is the sambit potency combined with the essence of Ladini. In other words, she is the personified form of Bhakti who is descended to assist Gaur Avatar in the work of spreading Srinam. So it's interesting. They say Bhakti is the Ladini Shakti. That's the pleasure potency. And the sambit Shakti, which is the cognitive potency. So basically, it's the combination of the sambit potency, which is knowing your relationship with Krishna, and the Ladini Shakti, having the sentiments of love of Godhead. So both are required for bhakti. The sentiments of love of Godhead, but also for an understanding of our relationship with love of Godhead. Just as Navadvip is the personified form, the sarup of the ninefold process of devotional service, Navada Bhakti. So Navadvip, there are nine islands, and each of the islands represent one of the nine processes of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Then it says in the same way, Vishnu Priya is the also the sarup of Navada Bhakti, of the nine processes of devotional service. So it's a nice meditation that the Shakti of Gauranga, Vishnu Priya, is the manifestation of the nine processes of devotional service. Babaji, how can there be any doubt about this? Oh, Prajanat, so can Vishnu Devi be called the Sarup Shakti? Vishnu Priya Devi? Babaji, how can there be any doubt about this? Is the combination of Sambit and the essence of Ladini anything but the Sarup Shakti? Prajanat, Prabhuji, I will soon learn to worship Sri Gaur. I've just remembered something else that I would like you to please explain clearly. So now he gives a little summary. He has explained that the Chit Shakti, the Jiva Shakti, and Maya Shakti are three manifestations of the Sarup Shakti. So the main energy is the Sarup Shakti. The manifestations, Chit Shakti, the eternal potency, Jiva Shakti, the marginal potency, Maya Shakti, the external potency. And that Ladini, Samvit, and Sandini are three functions of the Sarup Shakti, and that these three functions, namely Ladini, Samvit, and Sandini, act on the three manifestations, Chit Shakti, Jiva Shakti, and Maya Shakti. All of this is simply the work of Shakti. Apart from this, the spiritual world, the spiritual body, and the spiritual pastimes are all indications of the Shakti alone. Then what is the indication of Shaktiman Krishna? If everything is Shakti, then what is Krishna? He's the possessor of Shakti, but what is Krishna? If everything is Shakti, then what is Krishna? So Babaji says, this is a very difficult problem. You want to kill this old man with the sharp arrows of your arguments? My dear son, the answer is simple as the question, but it is difficult to find a person who is qualified to understand it. Anyway, I shall explain it, so please try to understand it. So sometimes simple answers are very difficult to understand because they take a certain realization to understand them, and they take a certain desire to understand them. Because our desires call for being justified. And therefore we have desires based on false ego. They tend to find ways to reject truths, even simple truths, that pass judgment on our desires in the false ego. So he explains. Let's see what we understand. Trying to explain. He's going to try to explain something that he says we have to be receptive to. Otherwise, and pray to. Otherwise, we're going to misunderstand it. Let's see what we can understand. I agree that Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes all indicate the function of Shakti. However, freedom, swatantrata, and free will, swaiccha mayataha, swaiccha mayata, are not the work of Shakti. They are both intrinsic activities of the Supreme Person. And Krishna is that Supreme Person who has free will and is the abode of Shakti. So he's saying there may be so many Shaktis, so many potencies, but independence and free will are not the work of Shakti. They are intrinsic to the Supreme Person. And that Supreme Person who has that free will is the abode of Shakti. Shakti is the enjoyed and Krishna is the enjoyer. Shakti is dependent, but Krishna is independent. Shakti surrounds that independent Supreme Person on all sides, but he is always conscious of Shakti. The independent Purusha is the master of Shakti, even though he is covered by Shakti. Human beings can only realize that Supreme Person, Parma Purush, by taking shelter of that Shakti. That is why the conditioned jiva cannot realize the identity of Shaktiman independently from realizing the identity of Shakti. However, when the bhakta develops love for Shaktiman, that's Krishna, the possessor of energy, they are able to perceive him who is beyond Shakti. Bhakti is a form of Shakti, and that is why she has a female form. Being under the influence of Krishna's internal potency, Sarup Shakti, she experiences the pastimes of the Purusha. Those pastimes indicate that Krishna is possessed of both free will and the intrinsic quality of being the predominating enjoyer. I'm just going to read this, and if you have any questions, you could ask. Vajranath, if we accept a tattva beyond Shakti that is devoid of characteristics by which it can be identified, that tattva would be the same as the Brahman described in the Upanishads. I'll read that again. That's a good question. If there's a tattva beyond Shakti that is devoid of Shakti by which can be identified, that tattva would be the same as Brahman described in the Upanishads. Babaji, the Brahman of the Upanishads is devoid of desires, but Krishna, the Parama Purush, who is described in the Upanishads, is actually composed of free will, swaicha maya. There is a big difference between the two. Brahman is nirvishesha, without any attributes. Conversely, even though Krishna is distinct from Shakti, he is savishesha, possessed of form and attributes, which he has the qualities of purushatva, manhood, bhoktritva, being the enjoyer, adhikara, authority, and svatantata, independence. In reality, Krishna and his Shakti are non-different. The Shakti that indicates Krishna's presence is also Krishna, because Krishna Kamini Shakti in the form of Sri Radha manifests her identity in a female form. Krishna is the one who is served, and the supreme Shakti, Srimataji, is his Seva Dasi. Their individual abhiman self-conceptions are the only tattva that differentiates them. So, somehow they have a separate identity. We'll probably try the next chapter and see how we do, too, and see how much further we can go, because that's jiva tattva, and then the next is jiva possessed by maya, then the next is jiva free from maya, and then there's the abhideya tattva. Then there's beta tattva, then abhideya tattva, and then vaidhi sadhana bhakti, and then, anyway. Let's see what we do. Well, let's finish this chapter. Vajranath, if Krishna's desire and capacity to enjoy indicate the form of Purusha, what is Srimati's desire? So this is interesting, because it specifically, in terms of Krishna, gave desire. So then what is Radha's desire? If Shakti has no free will and no independence, then what is Radha's desire as a person? So Babaji explained, Srimati's, Radhika's desire is subordinate to Krishna's. None of her desires or efforts are independent of his desire. Krishna has desires, and Srimati Radhika's desire is to serve Krishna according to his desire. Srimati Radhika is the complete and original Shakti, and Krishna is Purusha, that is, he controls and inspires Shakti. After this discussion, Babaji Maharaj observed that it was quite late and asked Vrajanath to return to his home. Vrajanath offered dandavat pranams at Babaji Maharaj's feet and walked towards Bilva Pushkarini in a blissful mood. Day by day, Brajanath's moods were changing. This very much alarmed his family members, and his paternal grandmother decided to get him married as soon as possible. She started looking for a suitable match, but Brajanath always stayed aloof from these matters and did not heed the conversations regarding marriage. Rather, he remained constantly absorbed in contemplating the various tattvas that he heard from Babaji Maharaj. He was naturally drawn to Babaji Maharaj and Sri Vasangam, for he wanted to realize those tattvas he had heard and was greedy to hear ever new nectarian teachings. Thus ends the 14th chapter of Jiva Dharma entitled Prameya Shakti Tattva. We'll go to the next chapter and read Jiva Tattva. The next day, Brajanath reached Sri Vasanga earlier than the previous days. The Vaishnavas from Gotram Dweep had also come before evening to take darshan of Sandhya Arti. And Sri Premdas Paramahamsa Babaji, Vaishnav Das, Advaita Das, and other Vaishnavas were already seated in the Arti Manda. When Brajanath saw the bhavas of the Vaishnavas from Gotram, he was struck with wonder and thought, I will perfect my life by having their association as soon as possible. When those Vaishnavas saw his humble and devotional disposition, all of them bestowed their blessings on Brajanath. When the Artik was over, Brajanath and the elderly Babaji began to walk southward together in the direction of Gotram. Raghunath Das Babaji saw incessant tears flowing from Brajanath's eyes, and feeling very affectionate towards him, asked lovingly, Baba, why are you weeping? Brajanath said, Baba, said Prabhu, when I remember your sweet instructions, my heart becomes restless, and the entire world seems to be devoid of all substance. My heart is becoming eager to take shelter at Gaurangadev's lotus feet. Please be merciful to me and tell me who I am according to Tattva, why I have come to this world. Babaji, my dear son, you have blessed me by asking such a question. The day that the Jiva first asked this question is the auspicious day on which his good fortune arises. If you'll kindly hear the fifth sloka of Dashamula, all your doubts will be cleared. And this is this fifth Dashamula, which we'll be discussing next week. Just as many tiny sparks burst out from a blazing fire, so the innumerable jivas are like atomic spiritual particles in the rays of the spiritual sun, Sri Hari. Though these jivas are non-different from Sri Hari, they are also eternally different from him. The eternal difference between the jiva and Ishvara is that the Ishvara is the Lord, master of Maya, where the jivas can fall under the control of Maya, even in his liberated stage, due to his constitutional nature. So are there any questions? Would someone say hello to let me know you're still there?
Hi, Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Atmananda.
Hi, Bro, Atmananda. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the wonderful talk.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bro, Gail. Anybody else like to ask, say hello?
I have a question, if I can
okay,
ask.
Okay, yeah, please.
So, when we're hearing about the Shakti, Krishna having independence, and then the Shakti is described here as not having that free will. Krishna having free will and the Shakti not having free will, and that being one of the primary distinctions between them. So then, also Babaji Maharaj was saying that it is difficult to understand these things, to understand this point. But I was thinking that maybe because we as jivas, in the conditioned state, we think of ourselves as having free will. And even, that's said there that the jiva has some free will in the Shastra. So, but here it's saying, it sounds like, you know, the jiva's actually not having free will, or, and Krishna does have. So,
your question is really good, you know, and Mahamuni, Professor Matthew Dasty, was the editor of an anthology of essays called Selfhood, Agency, and Free Will in Indian Thought. And he sent me a copy of that book. And even among Vaishnavas, there's different, you know, conceptions of how this works and to what degree. But my understanding also is that the living entity has to have some free will, otherwise what's the sense of karma? So, and then, or then what's the sense of Radharani's love? So I'm really wondering what the philosophical context is. It's translated into English as free will. Swaicha Mayata. It has its own desires, you know. I'm wondering if it's something like the body, you know, and the hands, but in a different way. It's, in other words, the body has the desires and the hands are meant to serve the desires, you know. So maybe there's free will, or there's a minute free will, but the desire doesn't initiate from the living entity. Even in the Bhagavatam, when Marge Prickett asked the question, you know, it says, you know, what's the first desire of the living entity, or why does the living entity come here? And it says, the first desire is of the living entity, and the consequent desire is of God to bring us here. So it seems that, you know, God has this somehow ultimate authority and ultimate sanctioning power, you know, that gives it that svatantrata, that freedom that nothing else has. Because everything else is dependent on God, so nothing else has absolute freedom. It's dependent on God. And in terms of svaicha mayata, so there was svatantrata, which means independence, so nothing is completely independent except God. And free will, it must mean absolute free will, because everything else has to be sanctioned by God, and it's the only really correct desire. So even Radharani's free will, she has choice, but her choice is not independent of Krishna's desire. So maybe in that sense, it doesn't have free will. So maybe it has something a little bit different than we think of free will. That it has something that not only the initiative is free will, but you also have to have the correctness of desire or the initiative of desire. You know, not just desire, but you have to be the initiator of desire. So there may be some subtle distinction, but it seems that the jiva has to have some free will. So I think sometimes the English translation, you know, and just believe me, you know, when we get into these topics, it's just so unbelievably deep, because whichever way you go philosophically, there's always problems. And you have to remember also that Sanskrit, being a cultured language, has so many more distinctions philosophically in terms of terms. that are not actually available in English. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. That's helpful. Thank you.
Think about it. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, is Gauran Bhaktadas.
I will go over to Hare Krishna. I'm going to try to make, I'm going to be in Colombia, and I'm coming back on the 29th of August, and I'm going to try to make, at least come directly from the airport to catch part of the opening of the temple there.
Okay, Maharaj, yeah.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you all, Hare Bhaktadas.